T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, a little after 4, as we welcome Bill Simmons, I want to tell you about, you can go to the Ringer and get Katie Baker's story on the feature on the Heat and the Knicks, a retrospective of how great that rivalry was, especially those 4 years when they met in the playoffs, again, all the chaos and all the intensity and physical play and controversies and everything that went on during that time. Great piece. Really wonderfully done. You can check that out on the Ringer there today. Also, there's a guy who came in from California to interview me. That's on there today, too. So you can check that out, too. And we welcome in the guy who puts the Ringer together, and that's Bill Simmons. Bill, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? I'm in Boston. Just pulled off a Game 7. Beat Washington. Intense. Great crowd. You would have loved it. Great playoff crowd.
And I really thought in the third quarter, Washington had done a good job of keeping everything under control, and what you can't do in those Game 7s is let the home team get that energy and get that run, and those couple of runouts, those couple of plays, especially the one that led to the 72-all tie, and then those Isaiah buckets just killed them. I mean, the next thing you know, they go from +4 to -13, and the game's over.
Yeah, the Celtics, you can beat them when Isaiah's not playing well and they're not making threes. So at halftime, I think everybody was nervous. And Washington looked like they were in control. They made a couple of mistakes. They let the crowd get into it.
Yep.
And Scott Brooks just, you know, he played Beal and Wall too long. He played them the whole second half. You got to coach differently in a Game 7 because it's so intense and it's so grueling and there's so much passion, emotion that it's really hard for guys to pace themselves. You could see those guys wearing down. Beal was exhausted and still making shots. Wall was terrible. Wall in the fourth quarter just ran out of gas.
He did. He was exhausted.
I don't think he made a shot.
No, he missed every shot. He was exhausted. He was out on his feet, and Olynyk just killed him. I mean, when you have a guy come off the bench and have that kind of game, I mean, that's just a killer game. I mean, you can't beat that kind of game when you're on the road in a Game 7. You can't have a guy go off on that kind of game.
And that's the thing. It's going to go down as the Olynyk game. And even in the stands during the timeouts, like, people were just in half enjoying it and half in disbelief because he'll do this like once a month. But to do it on that stage, then as everyone was leaving, you know, you're just people coming out of the stadium go, Kelly Olynyk, oh my God, you know. But you need that. That's the thing about the playoffs is, you know, so often role guys decide a game like that. You know, you always think like, oh, the stars are going to be what does it. And a lot of times, these random guys that can swing again.
Well, you do, and you create legacies, and you create, you know, games for yourself. You create name for yourself. Think about that in the other side when it's negative. Think about Harden right now, and you know how far he's going to have to go to erase that image of just the disappearing act of all time in that game.
Yeah, well. You know, I'm a little bit of a historian with this stuff, and you even go back a little further than I do. It's on the short list for worst disappearances at the worst time.
No question. One of the worst I've ever seen.
Yeah, but there's been other bad ones. Like Scottie Pippen had the migraine game, and that seemed like that was going to haunt him, and now nobody talks about that.
Right.
Rick Barry, 1976 Western Finals, just refused to shoot in the second half against Phoenix. LeBron, it seems like a million years ago, but I went to those games.
Listen,
2011 finals, like he didn't want to shoot. He was playing hot potato.
You know, he didn't erase that until the 40-point, 15-rebound game 6 in Boston. That's the game that erased it. That's the game that finally erased it for everybody.
It was the biggest game of his career. And, you know, I look at Houston, and I was a believer. I actually thought that of anyone in the West, they had the best chance to to not beat Golden State, but at least make them sweat because they could shoot so many threes and kind of change the math of the game. But then you watch them and when things slow down, and it's just so it's either threes or free throws. They had no plan B. San Antonio was just giving them 20-footers the whole series, like, please take these. And Houston wouldn't take them. And I do wonder if, you know, in football we have these football teams, and you know them when you see them. You're like, oh, that, you know, that's great. They're 12-4. They're 13-3. But in January, February, they're not going to do anything.
Yep.
And in basketball, we talk ourselves into these teams. But Houston is a classic. They're like, you know, the Thurman Thomas Bills, the run and shoot, Warren Moon. Like, all those teams where we always, like, just discount them. Oh, they're never going to do it. Kansas City's out. Smith out. Indeed. And that's Houston. Like, they... It's a great gimmick for the regular season, puts up huge numbers, but, you know, when things slow down and you need to use all the guys in your team, it just is a system that can't work.
Well, think about it. He was D'Antoni was finally getting postseason credit because they were on the verge of winning that series until Harden comes apart. He's got the ball up two and makes a series of turnovers in game five that are just mind-boggling. I mean, he turns the ball over and yells at Capella. I mean, he basically just self-destructs. You know, Ginobili picks his pocket. I mean, he makes four bad plays in the overtime, and then in game six, doesn't even show up.
Yeah, and I voted for him for MVP, which, you know, it's a regular season award. It's not a referendum on who the best player is because we vote for LeBron every year. But I really... In the moment, watching the game, he got popped in the head and, you know, was down for a little while and looked a little groggy. And I was watching it, and he had that famous concussion that Ron Artest gave him a few years ago. And I was like, wow, I think his bell got rung. He doesn't look right. And from that moment on, he was never the same. I don't think he would ever admit if something happened to him. I don't know what happened, but it's interesting that was the exact moment when his entire performance slipped. And I really do wonder if there was a connection.
Well, if not, he should pick it up right now and say it happened because it was that bad. We're talking with Bill Simmons. All right, make the best case you can make without being just absolutely ridiculous for Celtics in the conference finals.
Well, Mike, I don't know if you're aware of this, but apparently you can gamble on this stuff.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, are you telling me you're going to take 4.5 or 4-1 on the Celtics because they have home court in this series? You're not really, are you?
No. But the Cavs are -700.
Right. My guy told me it was 550. Is it more than 550? It was -700 now. Okay.
I've seen it as high as 700.
Okay.
But it's somewhere in that range.
Okay.
So I cannot remember in the history of the playoffs a conference finalist not having home court advantage and having
never.
A line like that.
Absolutely never. And the only way the series gets any attention is if the Celtics win game one. Because off 9 days off, if they can't beat them in game one, you cannot take them seriously. You're just not.
I agree. And I'll tell you this. Here's the case for the Celtics to at least extend the series and make it somewhat interesting is they're good at home. And what happens to them at home is the bench guys get involved. Marcus Smart is a different guy at home. Jaylen Brown is soaring around like he did last night at home. Olynyk is having Olynyk games like he did last night at home. They don't have that on the road usually. It's a team that is basically what you saw in that Washington series. They're really good at home. Isaiah will have at least one game every 10 days or so that he just single-handedly wins the game. And the bench is really good. On the road, occasionally they'll throw a haymaker. I mean, there's some decent matchup things in their favor in this series. The Avery Bradley really guards Kyrie Irving as well as anybody guards him for whatever reason. He's really good at kind of keeping him in check.
He's a good defender.
They can spread the team out. They can spread with all the shooters they have. The issue is LeBron.
He's the
third best player of all time. Yeah.
And he's just going to get, you know, there'll be a point where somebody yells something from the stands that annoys him, and he just goes off and scores, you know, 25 straight points in the game. You know, that regular season game there where supposedly somebody angered him in the first quarter, and I don't know if that's true or made up, but that was the rumor. And he just went off in that game. That's the only good game they played, like, the last 3 weeks of the regular season was when they destroyed the Celtics that night.
Yeah, I had a reader suggest that maybe the strategy for the fans should be to just cheer LeBron.
I think that's a good idea anyway. Maybe bring presents or something too, you know?
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Chant MVP when he's at the
absolutely,
free throw line,
absolutely,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
But here's what I think they should do, though. And I've seen teams do this. And if you remember, like the San Antonio Spurs did this in 2005 against Nash and the Suns, they just gave Nash his points. They said, we're staying home with all your shooters. We're going to let you go one-on-one. We're going to give you the paint. If you want to score 40 a game, knock yourself out. We're not letting these other guys beat us. I kind of think that's what the Celtics should do with
LeBron. I like it, and I'll tell you, I'll even up the ante a little bit. You guys got a lot of guys who can give up fouls. Also, send him to the line. He might have one of those 63% nights and getting his head a little bit on the foul line where he doesn't feel comfortable really on the foul line that night, so he stops driving a little bit because he doesn't love the foul line because he feels like he's not having one of his nights. And then all of a sudden, he looks to pass a little bit because he's not having one of his foul line nights, and until he just starts dunking everyone. But before that, you know, at least you could maybe get him to miss some foul shots, and, you know, you might steal a game.
And the foul shots, that is part of the key for this for me. I know ESPN, the magazine, has a big piece coming about how bad and erratic his foul shooting is.
Well, you know what? He's got to stop moving his feet, first of all. You know that? First thing is you have to be comfortable and be consistent on the foul line. And he keeps changing. And that's the problem. He changes his feet all the time, which is a big problem.
And I think Toronto's biggest mistake, you know, in Toronto without Lowry, I don't think they got enough credit for how important Lowry was to them, and he wasn't right when he came back.
I totally agree.
I'm not saying they would have beaten them, but
he happen to like Lowry, so I happen to like Lowry.
I did
so
too.
By
the way, it would have potentially changed the decade for the Knicks, but we could talk about that later.
Yes.
I thought they should have stayed home in the shooters, let LeBron go one-on-one, let him get his 40 to 45 every night and hammer him every time he went to the basket. Make him shoot free throws. Try to wear him down. Unfortunately, the Celtics don't really have the personnel for that because they're probably missing, you know, two big guys that could have the 12 extra fouls. I think Washington probably would have been better suited for it. But I would love to see, like, LeBron should never get a layup in the playoffs. You know, I grew up in an era where nobody got a layup in playoff games.
Well, now that brings us to the great piece Katie Baker did on Miami and the Knicks. The perfect era of Riley coming to the Garden, Knicks, the year after the Bulls put on an embarrassing display by dunking Jordan and Pippen basically dunking every other ball and coming down the lane and turning it into like a Harlem Globetrotter game, just dunking every ball. Riley takes over and says, nobody comes down this lane ever. You know, then they throw Pippen in the stands a few times and, you know, no rebound, no rings, no blood, no foul. And that basically, that kind of basketball, well, you know, that's what we lived through with the Heat, with the Pacers, with the Bulls. I mean, that was great stuff. I missed that basketball because now you can't breathe on a guy.
Well, I'll tell you who else did it, and it wasn't that long ago. It was the 2011 Mavericks. That was basically their strategy with Tyson Chandler and some of the other guys is to clog the lane and never try to let him get a layup or a dunk to get going and just keep pounding him and being physical and trying to get in his head. The problem is, you know, he keeps like – he's almost like a artificial intelligence computer, like from the future that is eventually going to take over the world. Like he gains intelligence each season, and every time somebody tries something on him, he kind of files it away and then has some sort of answer for it. I wrote this last week. I think the way he played those first two series, that was the best I've seen him play in 8 years.
I think he played I agree. I thought he played as well, and except for his free throw shooting, I thought he played as well as I've ever seen him play, as a matter of fact. Now, he's not as good defensively as he used to be.
No.
But that's part of the, you know, he can't do everything defensively anymore. But offensively, I don't think he's ever been better. I agree.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he's in fantastic shape. He's much more confident with his outside shooting than he used to be. In the old days, it was just let him shoot from the outside. If he makes them, he makes them.
And Korver's going to be a big problem in the series.
Well,
big problem.
That's the thing, is the spacing that this team has now. When you look back, if you go on YouTube and you watch like the 2008 Celtics-Cavaliers Game 7, which was the Pierce-LeBron duel, and he's got like Delonte West, Vera Zhao, Ogoskis. You know, these are guys that wouldn't even play a minute for this Cavs team now. Now he's surrounded by shooters. And the fact that, you know, Kevin Love is a real three-point threat now and has been for a couple years, but is especially kind of begrudgingly settled into that role.
Yeah, he's accepted his role. Yeah, he's accepted his role. He has. Yeah, you got to be fair. He's become a good team guy. He doesn't complain.
Yeah. Well, if they lose this year, I'll be interested to see how it plays out. If they lose the Warriors series, I'll be interested to see if he just wants to spend his prime in the corner, basically, occasionally posting up. I think for this year it works, and if they win the title, great. But I do think, like, you know, if they can get through the Celtics series in 4 or 5, and now you're getting to the finals, and you've given LeBron just an incredible amount of rest between these series, because they're not starting the finals, regardless of what happens, till June 1st. So, you know, if he could just be like, I'm going all, you know, we win in 4 or 5.
Yep.
I'm going all out in this Warriors series. All I have to do is play 45 minutes a game 7 times in 18 days. Like, he can do that.
I agree. So what do you think? 5 games? I mean, I think 5. Can you see more than 5 games? Can you see a legitimate? Could you ever see 7 games in the series?
I think the Celtics would have to win tomorrow night.
I agree.
I know they always say, like, the home team has to win game one, but I think especially in this series,
the home team has to. Oh, they're not going to be taken seriously. I totally agree. It's just not going to have any life if it doesn't happen, you know. Too bad what happened in San Antonio, because San Antonio was going to beat Golden State in game one. They were going to beat them, you know, too bad. And they still had their chances. I mean, they really did. Now that series is over, so they're going to have plenty of rest. But you know what's interesting
Though? Wait a second, though. So I'm watching that game, and I thought Golden State was going to win. I just think they're better than the Spurs.
The Spurs are playing
out of their minds.
Oh, no question. Yeah.
And the thing with the Warriors this year, even when they're down 20, when you have Durant and you have Curry, it's so hard for neither of those guys to get hot in a playoff game, especially in a situation like in that series where there's like nobody to guard Curry.
No, when you have both of them and Leonard off the floor, they have no way to guard them. There's just no chance.
At that point, I was like, oh, they're definitely winning. But I kind of felt like they were winning anyway because they were getting good shots. They just weren't going in. Curry's playing great. You know, Curry has somehow become underrated. He's the 2-time MVP, and he didn't play well for 2 months. So it was like, oh, it's Durant's team now. Forget Curry. You know, I voted for him 5th for MVP. I think the spacing that he creates with how dangerous he is offensively.
You know the one thing, though? Thompson's been lost offensively with those two there.
Yeah.
He really has. He's kind of had to defer, and he doesn't know exactly what he's comfortable with, and it really has hurt his offense on that team. It really has. He's got so much more to offer than he does now with that team.
And he's the guy, if you want to talk about how do you extend this run for 10 years instead of 3 or whatever, I think Thompson's the guy you got to start looking at, because they're going to be in major trouble with the salary cap. And I think it's either next year or year after, because they got to pay Curry. Durant's going to be able to opt into a bigger deal. And it's just the way the salary cap is constructed. You can't have 4 max guys. It's pretty much impossible. So around the league, people seem to think that if they ever do make a move, it would be with Clay, because you could.
I think he's a tremendous player.
Role guys.
I don't think they've even scratched the surface with how good he is either.
I'm with you. I think there's more of a post-up presence with him. The thing is, defensively, I think he slipped a little bit this year. And now he's just like this kind of spot-up shooter. And I just think he's a much better and more creative offensive.
Oh, he is. He just kind of gets lost a little bit because the other two, I mean, they're just so dominant in what they did, as you saw the other night when they got to 74. We're talking with Bill Simmons. Let me jump to something I wanted to get to, because we had Big Poppy on yesterday. He was doing his book thing, and we were one of the shows he got that he did a half hour with. And interesting in the book, and the book's actually, he's pretty candid in the book. But the one thing I wanted to get to from this standpoint is, I want to use Boston as the example here. Clearly, he was on the tests that were never made public, and he was one of those. But he never failed a test otherwise. And he has denied, and he denied to me yesterday 10 times that he ever did steroids. When that stuff happened before that big press conference at Yankee Stadium, the Boston guys, Shaughnessy, Ryan, except they came out and killed him, as we know, and at the time. And Boston turned it back around and fell back in love with him, and we know where he stands there. Is there any thought up there that there's still this lingering doubt about him that will somehow put up a barricade about him getting into the Hall of Fame? Or is that completely dissolved up there now because of what he became in the years since then?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not here day to day anymore, but just from what happened in 2013, I think that eliminated all that stuff, at least from a Boston fan perspective, because, you know, the other thing that was going on in 2009 and 2010 was he wasn't playing that well.
No, he wasn't hitting like he hit afterwards, yeah. He hit 238. I mean, he still hit 99 RBIs, but he hit 238 that year.
Yeah, but I remember, like, that May, you know, he started out, like, the first 6 weeks, I think he was hitting like 150.
He was. He came to Yankee Stadium. He was doing nothing. He wasn't even playing. Francona told me he didn't even know if he was going to play him. I mean, I remember that. It was a big deal. Yeah.
I remember writing a column for ESPN the magazine right during the tail end of that. And, you know, it was really fascinating to watch. And it's the only time I've ever seen this other than Larry Bird near the end when his back was just broken and he wasn't playing well, but the fans couldn't do anything. Like, they weren't going to boo him. There was so much respect and people just really wanting it to turn around. And it was never like Ortiz would strike out and you would just hear this weird sound in the stadium, like, you know, it was almost like he was like everybody's little league kid and the fans were the parents. So when that turned around, and I think you can't understate the impact of the marathon bombing.
Sure, and how he took over the city and everything. Yeah,
and then the team winning and him coming through in the postseason, things like that. And look, I'm admittedly a homer. You're a New York homer, I'm a Boston homer. But I've never been totally satisfied with the New York Times, the whole leaking thing. It was like 103 names. There was no rules in place for anything at that point. And just these random names got leaked off this list, and these guys, they didn't even really know it. They thought it was anonymous. We still don't know what he tested positive for.
That's true, too. See, he goes through that in the book, and he does a very good... See, he did, unlike A-Rod, who did also admit once that he took it in 2001 and also tested positive later...
Right.
Poppy never did, and he does a very good job of defending himself, as does the Players Association in the book, by saying... We never made it public that was real. We never said anybody was on that list. It's just rumor. No one ever saw the list. Number two, they never said that every positive was a positive for steroids. You could have been tested positive for other things. That was a survey test that was done to set up the next year's testing.
It could have been amphetamine.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah,
so,
that's the thing.
Right. They never declared what it was. Right. So they said you jump into conclusions. So he defended that very well and I think made a very good case for himself since then, and I think he's going to be the one who's got a background who's going to get in the Hall of Fame, and I wonder if that will change things if that's the case. I wonder if it will.
Yeah, but let's be honest. In 10 years, all these guys are going to be in. It was that era. I just feel like...
I don't know when they're going to get in, though. I don't know who's going to be the first one to jump in there, though. I don't know when that's going to happen. But
Clemens is my least favorite athlete probably ever from the way he left Boston and the stuff he said. Like, I'm always going to root against that guy. Even I think Clemens should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, I'm not arguing that part. But, again, they're going to keep – I just wondered if he was going to be the guy, because they're keeping guys out with innuendos. I wonder if it would affect him. And I figured Boston was the – and you, last time you were on, talked about how he is actually on the Mount Rushmore in Boston. He's that big Poppy up there. I mean, he really is.
Yeah. I think he is. But Piazza made it with some innuendo.
Yes, he did, but no proof.
Never proven.
No proof.
No proof.
No proof. No. And Bagwell will be the same way. No proof.
I'm not positive there's proof with this Ortiz thing. Look, I'm not naive.
I don't know if there is or not. I think there's enough of a shadow of a doubt that, listen, I don't know if he did or not, and I always think most guys probably did rather than didn't, but who knows?
Yeah.
Again, but you got to have proof to me to keep him out. That's my theory is you got to have proof to keep him out. You just do.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm sure there's people now that we'd be shocked by. I look back at my reaction in the late 90s, which mirrored everybody else's reaction during the Maguire-Sosa thing, where everybody was like, this is great. Oh, my God. Are they juicing the balls? What's going on? Oh, all these homers. These guys are amazing. We had no idea. You know, remember that reporter found the
stuff in his locker.
In Maguire's locker. Yeah, and the reporter became a pariah. And it all became about how he's invading Maguire's privacy. Why is he... Who cares if he has creatine? Meanwhile, creatine, now we know what it is. But, you know, I just wonder sometimes, the athletes have always kind of stayed ahead of both public perception and the drug testing technology and all that stuff. And when you think about these guys that are constantly searching for an edge and their bodies are their livelihood, I'm always thinking about it. Anybody who says they don't think about it is lying.
All right, let me ask you this. We're talking with Bill Simmons. If the and it's funny, you said when you texted me today about coming on, the same thing I said to the audience today. For some reason, I think the Knicks are going to have a good night tonight. Now, I don't know if they're going to be in the top three or they're going to get the top pick. I just got a positive feeling. They send in Clyde. I just got a positive feeling for some reason about the Knicks tonight. I don't know why. If the Celtics get the first pick, what is their strategy in your mind with their team, where they are now? What do you think their play is?
Well, I think Fultz has established himself as the number one guy. I just think he's this do-it-all guy.
So you don't think they trade the pick for an existing star? You think they draft Fultz?
I'd be surprised, because I think ultimately their game plan, you know, would be to try to sign a free agent because they have the cap space, make a huge run at Gordon Hayward,
right?
Coached by Brad Stevens in college,
right?
And take the best asset and figure it out. So if it ends up being Fultz, it ends up being Fultz. But you could also see, you know, the Belichick move. Philly's going to have probably, you know, they could have the fourth pick and the seventh pick, something like that. The Belichick move would be to trade backwards and turn the pick into two picks. You know, I don't know what they're going to do. I have no feel for it. The only thing that I feel pretty confident about is that I don't think they'd mess with Lonzo Ball.
I think there's
a few teams in that camp.
How committed are they to Isaiah Thomas? They're committed to him?
Yeah, you can't overstate how popular he is in Boston.
Okay.
I mean, you go to the games and it's like every kid under 14 has an Isaiah jersey. And, you know, he's reached his point. You could feel it yesterday during the game. When he doesn't play well, it affects the crowd. The crowd feeds off him. And that was why I thought Washington had a chance yesterday, because Isaiah wasn't playing well and the crowd gets bummed out. Like, they just respond to everything he does, good or bad. Am I crazy about the thought of paying a 5'7½ guy $40 million when he's 34? Like, no. I don't think that's great business.
Well, listen, when he scores 10 points a game in the fourth quarter, it's not too bad, though.
But I'll tell you, though, the Celtics haven't gotten enough credit for, you know, and I've killed the team in the past when they haven't deserved it, but just in this case, I think they're the youngest team that's made the conference
finals. Plus, the coach is really good. Listen, I've been in love with the coach since he was at Butler. The guy is a great coach. He learned his trade in the NBA the right way. He's going to be a big star for a long time. There's going to be a time when he's going to be the guy in the NBA. It's not even going to be a question. He's going to be the revered figure in the NBA. It's coming. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and I mean, he's their biggest advantage in this series, to be honest. But, you know, the Celts are in good shape. Yeah, young roster, full of stars, a lot of cap space, two big picks. And, you know, with the Knicks, I think the Knicks are in good shape. Like, if you remove Phil Jackson, who's in a coma, and you remove Dolan and his two decades of just managing to screw things up with different hires and things like that, like, they still have Porzingis. They're going to be able to turn Carmelo into something. And this is a great draft.
It's a great point. As long as they get a good player, if they wind up with someone like Fox, they'd be in great shape. Great shape.
Yeah, and they might get in the top three, but, like, they're going to get a potential all-star in this draft.
Now, you mentioned Ball. Are you telling me teams now are running away from Ball because of the old man? Is that happening?
No, I don't know if it's a running away thing. I think he's the most polarizing guy, because there's two things going on with him. One is that if they're that focused and that, you know, public about wanting him to go to the Lakers, and you're a team like Orlando – and you've been through this, you know, with Shaquille O'Neal and Dwight Howard already, where you've had stars that are basically like, get me out of here. And now you're turning the car keys over to Lonzo Ball, whose dad is just, all he does is talk about how he wants to end up on the Lakers someday. I don't know how you feel good about that. If you're the Celtics and you're bringing this guy in, you have this great team culture, very selfless. Isaiah's your point guard. Everybody knows their role. Bringing this guy in, whose dad is going to say, oh, my son's better than Isaiah Thomas right now. That's a pretty dangerous thing to do.
I would agree. And it's tough if you're a young coach, too. It's tough for a coach to deal with that. I would agree with that part.
Right. Yeah. So that's one issue. The other issue is he got his ass kicked by De'Aaron Fox.
Fox killed him.
He killed him.
Yeah.
And he didn't just kill him. He was afraid to bring the ball up against him.
Listen, I like Fox. I like Fox better. I would take Fox over him anyway. I'm telling you right now. I love Fox. I think Fox is going to be
Fox
tremendous.
Too.
And Monk is really good too. I'm telling you, Monk's a great athlete, and he's going to be a great shooter. He's not a point guard. The other kid's Fox a pure point. The other kid though is going to be a tremendous. They rave about him as being a prodigious talent. Monk. He's got incredible talent.
And he works really hard, and that's to my point about the Knicks. You know, their worst case scenario is probably Malik Monk.
Yeah, and that's a good player. That's a really good player.
And guess what? He'll be the most popular guy in MSG since Bernard King.
Oh, he'll be unbelievable. He will be filling it up. He absolutely would be wonderful. I agree.
So yeah, I would say the Knicks fans tonight could be a good night. I do like the Clyde Frazier move. It's a great move.
Yeah, so do I. I actually do, too. I got a good vibe about that. I don't know why. I just do. I have all day, which, you know, I don't know if it means anything. But I just think that something good's going to happen for them for a change.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. The Lakers are -110 to get a top three pick.
Right.
So if you're betting on it, you're basically betting that the league has to make sure that they get a number three pick with whatever voodoo they do to make it happen. But if they don't get that third pick, they don't get a pick at all. It goes to Philadelphia, and not just that, but then their 2019 first-round pick goes to Orlando.
I say they don't get it.
They could lose two picks.
Don't get it.
That's a devastating move for them because they don't have an all-star on that team. They'd be sitting out the best draft in 10 years, and then they'd also lose the first round in 2 years. Like, that is one of the most devastating lottery scenarios we've had.
That is a very interesting scenario tonight. It really is. There's a couple of them. So you got the Celtics, Knicks, and Lakers all very much vested in tonight. That's big.
And the Sixers. It's basically like the 1980s NBA, the elite ruling classes of the 1980s is all involved in this lottery.
That makes it fun. Sixers, yeah.
Yeah, the Sixers could end up, if that Lakers pick falls four or below, and also the Sixers have their own pick, they have the right to swap with Sacramento. So there's all these scenarios where they could have, like, the first and fourth picks, the second and fourth picks. Like, they could have two top five picks.
We're talking with Bill Simmons. What's going on with the Ringer? What's new?
Well, we put up a big feature today about a longtime New York personality.
Yeah, that guy was a nice guy who came in to talk to me. For the guy,
he's a
Curtis.
Very good writer.
Yeah, very good guy. Very good guy. He came in from California to talk to me. So that's up. And then Katie Baker, who does a great job, job. And she talked to everybody about that. I don't know if she got right. I think Riley mailed her some answers. I think that was it. But did he finally talk to her?
Riley wouldn't talk in the morning. Wouldn't talk. Miami's pretty closed mouth about all this stuff, but it's funny, like, the Knicks fans look back so nostalgically at that era.
It was unbelievable.
I'm like the opposite.
You know what? That
opposite.
Era was so good.
It was like rugby.
I mean, I can't tell you that I was saying to the guys today that I don't think if you added up all the time I've spent on the Knicks that it would equal a whole show in the last 8 years. And in those days, we would do nonstop Knicks for a month.
Yeah.
I mean, they were so big. They were such a big part of the city. They were, you know, their games were events. Sunday at the Garden, Friday night at the Garden. I mean, every May, every spring, it was like an annual rite of spring. It was unbelievable. And those series were all so intense. You know, Riley came here and changed everything. He made the Knicks rock stars. He really did. The Knicks became a show. They became a New York show when he came to town, and it lasted a long time. It really did. And even after he was gone, it lasted for a while.
Yeah, one of the things I liked about that oral history is it reminded me that in 97, which was the second of the Jordan three-peat seasons in that one, you know, people really did think they had a shot to hang with the Jordan Bulls that year because Rodman was getting a little wonky.
They did.
They traded for Brian Williams, or I think he was Bison Dele by that point.
But, yep.
You know, they'd win 69 games. It's not like there was, like, you know, all these flaws. But the Knicks played well. Houston used to really go at Jordan. Ewing was always kind of an issue for the Bulls. And, you know, there was a scenario where at least it looked like it was going to be a bloodbath.
Absolutely.
And when you watch that YouTube clip, you know, all those guys jumping off the bench when everybody knew the rule at that point.
It was just,
I don't like it. It didn't sit right with me.
It was a bad ruling. You know, my first reaction was how dumb the Knicks were and how dumb Patrick was. But the more I thought about it, and I said this to Katie, the more I thought about it, I don't think the punishment fit the crime. I don't think it did. Ewing had no interest in anything. He wasn't involved in mayhem. He wasn't going to be an instigator. He wasn't going to be involved in the fight. He took 2 feet. He stepped 2 feet too far. And that's all he did. And basically it cost him a year that he did that.
Yeah, and you're penalizing guys for being loyal teammates.
Yes, it was terrible. It was terrible, and Stern would not move. I mean, we had him on. He would not budge. He would not. You know how he was. He wouldn't budge.
The worst one was 10 years later, though, because, you know, when Robert Horry body-checked Steve Nash into the scores table,
yep,
and Amari and Boris Diaw ran off the bench, partly out of concern and partly because, like, they just witnessed an assault. And then those guys get suspended the next game. I still think the Spurs would have won that series, but that was even more defensible to me because that was a total provocation by Horry, who was at the end of his career at that point.
Both of them were bad. I totally agree. I mean, both cost.
T.J. Brown did suplex. He did throw Charlie Ward into the cheerleaders, basically. So I see that part.
Are you worried about the Red Sox yet or no?
Well,
this idea of them being great this year is nonsense. You understand that. First of all, how are they going to be nonsense when you take Big Poppy's numbers out of the middle of that lineup from last year? The guy was unstoppable last year. He had 49 doubles. He hit .315. His slugging percentage was through the roof. You were not going to replace him. And then with Price not really, you know, being Price anymore, that's two big hits they took, even with getting Sale. So then they still are good, but they weren't going to be overwhelming this year.
Well, and they also lost Ortiz in the clubhouse, which I think, you know, wasn't great either. He took a lot of attention off everybody, especially last year, because it was just Ortiz all the time, which is great if you're the other guy.
Yes, absolutely. He made it easy on Betts, and I love Betts, but it made it easy on him last year.
Yeah. There's some issues with the Sox, like Price. You know, their team was built around Sale and Price and Porcello, and Price hasn't even pitched yet. The bullpen... They made a couple bets on where they traded prospects for these setup guys, and both of them are hurt.
Yep.
You know, and they have kind of a rinky-dink bullpen for the most part. And then some of the younger guys just aren't hitting. And it's like, is that happening because the Ortiz shadow is gone?
I think partially.
The spotlight's a little brighter. It might be.
I think partially. I think it makes it a lot easier. It does when you have a guy leading like that. I think it makes it a lot easier.
It's hard for me to panic in mid-May.
No, you can't.
They'll
be fine, actually.
162.
But remember, people thought they were going to run and hide this year. That's the thing. People thought they were going to be just unstoppable. They're not unstoppable. Neither are the Cubs, but they're not unstoppable right now. That's for sure.
I just like that the Yankees are relevant again. We talked about this the last time I was on, but, like, you know, these Yankees-Red Sox games hit a point where they just had no meaning at all. It was just the uniforms going against the uniforms, and it didn't feel like there was anything special about it. And now that the Yankees have this new generation of guys...
They got some good young players. They really do.
Yeah.
And more coming.
And the fans love them.
Yeah, and more coming. They got some good guys. There's no question. They'll be fun for there's a new generation. There's going to be new teams to hate. There's no question.
It's interesting, though. Today, Verducci wrote in Sports Illustrated about baseball's PED problem that hasn't gone away, which I hadn't even been focused on. I just thought maybe the balls were a little tighter this year or something, but had this whole piece. I thought baseball had solved the PED problem, and then I read this piece, which was really good, and made me think, like, I wonder if we ever solve it. And
I don't think anybody ever solves in sports any drug problem because they are always one step ahead.
That's how I feel about it, too, especially, like, people always focus on the hitters, but I just look at the pitchers watching these guys. I'd never remember this many guys throwing 96, 97, 98.
Well, look how high the strikeout records are broken every month. So,
yeah,
I mean, the strikeouts are unbelievable. They strike in the 6th, 7th inning now, you face guys who were... The other night, I'm at the game, and the guy comes in from Houston, Davinsky, comes in, averaging 16.9 strikeouts per 9 innings. The guy's a setup man for the Houston Astros. No one's ever heard of him, and the guy is averaging 16.9 per 9 innings.
Yeah, I mean, and Betances was like that for a while, and now it seems like every team has a guy like that.
Yep.
You go down the line, like in the American League, it's like the White Sox have one, the Blue Jays have one, the Astros have two. These guys that are averaging like a strikeout and a half, I don't get it. It's certainly not what we grew up with. We grew up with a lot more junk. and a lot more, I don't know. It just, these guys come in now. It's like they came off the farm in the natural.
It is, and they throw the ball. That's it. And you don't even foul it off anymore, though. That's the thing. You don't even foul it back. You just, like, strike out. That's it. You're just three and you're gone. I mean, it is that
way. When was the last time you watched The Natural?
The Natural?
Yeah.
I bet you I've seen it in the last year. There's a couple of movies that you just happen into and you just never turn. There's a couple that you just never turn the channel. The Godfather's one. You just never turn the channel. The Natural is another. If you happen into Scarface, it happens. Same thing. You can't turn it off. I mean, as much as you laugh at it, you can't turn it off. You can't. And Goodfellas is the same way. Same thing. There's just certain movies that you just can't turn off. There's just no way to do it.
I watched The Natural with my son a couple weeks ago, who's 9, who had never seen it before. It drags in a couple parts, which I had forgotten, but for the most part, he loved it. And I was watching it, and it's one of my favorite sports movies ever. Richard's like 55.
He is. And you know what movie they've been? You know what they've been playing lately? All the President's Men, and I wonder why. But lately they've been playing that a lot on cable. So I guess they're trying to subliminally put that in people's minds. But they've been playing all the President's Men a lot on cable lately. I've seen the last couple of weeks.
By the way, that's one of my movies that I jump into whatever part of the movie it is.
That's it. I'm telling you, it was on this week. I just saw it the other day.
Yeah.
You know, Redford in his corduroy suit running around.
Yeah. Talk to the Deep Throat. I'm so disappointed that we found out who Deep Throat was. I never wanted to actually know. I always wanted to think it was Al Haig.
Well, they still, still some people still debate, you know, whether that's accurate or not. You know, there is some, you know, alternate theories on that. So,
I didn't know there was. I thought the guy revealed himself.
Well, you know, but people still wonder if that was really exactly the guy or not. There's still a couple of guys who are holding out, thinking that maybe, even though he did, that was to cover up. That was the final cover-up, you know?
Right.
So,
if they did all the President's Men now, I think it would have to be like a 12-episode Netflix series. It has to be like 15
Did you
hours.
Watch Billions?
I did.
This year was much better than last year. It was much better than last year. I thought it was terrible. I have to admit, this year it was a lot better. Homeland's made a great recovery this year, too. I liked Homeland.
Season 1 of Billions was terrible?
I didn't like season 1, but I loved this. This year I thought was so much better written, so much better. I thought the first year was very predictable. This year I thought was great. I really did.
So you should have one of the co-creators, Brian Koppelman, who also wrote Rounders.
Right, which is a great movie.
You should have him on because he's like the biggest Knicks fan of all time. That's Axe's destiny, I think. Like season 5, I think he buys the Knicks from James Dolan.
No, they won't let him.
That's where this whole thing's going.
They won't let him. They
you
won't let
so?
Him. No, he already tried to buy it. You know, he tried to buy a team, right? They won't let him buy another team.
The Giants tried that. Steve Tisch tried that.
He's just getting out of jail. He's not going to get to buy a team now. He's already in jail right now.
So he's not. Need some of the guys who bought NBA teams.
So he's not going to buy. But Rounders, as long you know, the best line of all, one of the great movie lines of all time. Give the man his money is one of the great lines in the history of movies.
Well, that was the issue with Billions becoming a real success for Showtime is that Rounders 2 had always been kind of floating around with Damon and the guys who wrote it,
right?
Koppelman and Levine, and now Billions is going to be on for 10 years, and I just feel like Rounders 2 is out the window.
Well, but I would like to see Rounders 2.
Rounders 2?
I like to see if he goes back with the girl or not.
Oh, she's gone. Yeah, she ditched him. And I think he might have finished like second in the World Series of Poker, but then blew his money in some big cash game. Now he's trying to get back on the circuit.
There's
a total movie. It's easy.
It's
a no-brainer.
I like it. All right, listen, I'll talk to you soon. Be well.
All right,
nice to have you on. Good luck with everything. And, you know, I tell everyone to forget my thing. Go read Katie Baker's story because it's great on the Heat and the Knicks, a retrospective of how great that time was with basketball just in that era. It really is well done. She did a great job.
Thank you.
Take care.
On TheRinger.com. Good luck to the Knicks fans.
Thanks. All right. Bill Simmons, back after this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.